listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. Sorry, I'm laughing because I can see the reflection of Scott's monitor in his microphone arm because it's like a glossy black. And he is currently looking at an Instant Pot on Amazon.
I'll let you know that we already have an Instant Pot, okay? I popped over to Amazon to see if they had the EVRE20 in black, and they don't. But these are their Cyber Monday deals.
Awesome. Well, we got a banger of a show for you today. We are going to do 2020 in review. So first, we're going to take everything that we predicted would be tech to watch in 2020. So we did a show at the beginning of the year. And some of them we were bang on. Some of them we were, big miss. And then we're going to go through just some other, like, what did we think 2020? What was hot? What had a big come up? What did we focus on as web developers in 2020? Today, we are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is LogRocket, which does your JavaScript session replay. And second one is FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. We'll talk about them partway through the show. So welcome, Scott. It's almost the new year, 2021. It's been a heck of a year, to say the least. It's funny looking back at these notes because we had no idea what 2020 had in store for us. But we're going to just go through all the predictions that we had as well as some other tech that we thought was big in 2020. So you want to kick it off there?
Yeah, we were so hopeful, young and hopeful. First one is CSS Subgrid, which did show up. It's in browsers. And what's actually the can I use status of Subgrid?
I use Subgrid in my Master Gatsby course. And then we wrote a supports query in CSS to fall back to not the exact layout, but like a sort of equivalent with free space rows. But I was like, oh, this Subgrid is awesome.
So Subgrid's only in Firefox right now. I was thinking it was in a Canary as well, but it looks like it's only in Firefox. So it's a thing. Like I said, I haven't used it yet. And like you said, you have a fallback for it. So, okay, it became a thing. It became somewhat usable, but I doubt most people are still really diving into Subgrid to the degree that they could in the future, considering it is going to really allow you for some really flexible, awesome layout stuff.
That's the thing about only having two or three browsers now, is once it does land, we're going to be in good shape. Yeah, Safari will probably roll it out in, 4 or 5 years, and they'll have their own version of it.
Yeah, they'll put it behind an OS update that no one's going to want to do. So,
next one we had here was CSS Houdini, and I'm going to say this one was a big miss because Scott and I were pretty bullish on CSS Houdini, and I thought by now we would have saw a lot more. And there's certainly stuff, like we talked to Adam Argyle about it, and there's people working on it, but it's not at a point now where just like us regular developers can start to implement it in our app.
Yeah, Houdini is one of those ones that I am very excited about. And I was like, I have a Houdini course ready. Not like, and the course is not ready to go, but I've been building the outline for it for so long that I'm just ready to get doing it. Is HoudiniReadyYet.com is a great place to see the status of that. There are definitely a lot of aspects of Houdini that have shipped, but this is one of the ones I will still put on my list for 2021 because I still think it's going to come very soon and it's going to be very cool. Well, maybe not very soon, but it's going to come and it's going to be very cool. Next one is CSS features that were not supported in older browsers. Things like scroll snap and position sticky. I think I've used position sticky a lot more than I've never used scroll snap. Actually, I've used it in a demo, but I've never used it. I don't know. There's some CSS features that to me gained a little bit more traction in my heart this year, but I don't think scroll snap specifically was one of them. Sticky, definitely one of them.
Yeah, I think one thing we can say about 2020 is that in most cases, IE is officially dead.
Yes.
It's obviously still supported in some use cases, but the more I talk to people, the more I hear is, we're not supporting IE anymore at all. We're in a really good spot now with Microsoft Edge running Chrome. We don't have a whole lot of those issues. That's a whole nother aspect of it. But I'm pretty excited about it because there's a whole new swath of CSS that we can now use, as well as when new features come out, we can just go ahead and start using them within 6 months or so. We don't have to now wait years and years. And the thing that always kills me is anytime I have to, I tweet about any new feature, we always get the, yeah, but what about,
yeah.
And I'm like, so that's, those are like going away. They're still there, but it's going away.
It'll always be there. It's part of the industry. But again, it is, as long as that problem gets better, then everything gets better for us. The next one was a big fail, big swing and a miss for us. This is me when I was playing T-ball here, as in I stepped up to the plate and I swung and I would usually hit the T-ball stand instead of the ball. And I'm talking about NPM Tink is something we had on our list, which is an installerless NPM, something a little bit more similar to what you're starting to see with some of these tools. Like, I think, what's the one that has all the package listing? Is it Skype? I know it's not Snowpack that I'm thinking of. It's Skypack, or the one where you can install directly from URLs. Either way, this sort of thing is coming to be a little bit more prevalent here, where we're removing the idea of a node modules folder where things might get installed on your system rather than being installed in a directory for the individual application. But NPM Tink, as far as I know, I would love for somebody to come clarify for this, but I have not seen any movement on this at all. I don't think it's even a thing, really.
No. What people were really excited about NPM Tink is that there was going to be updates to NPM. I think people were a little bit frustrated with the pace at which features were being rolled out and things like that. And that's why we got Yarn. And then we were all excited about NPM Tink. But it's been huge for NPM. I feel like the NPM in general has really been listening to us. They opened up 2 new GitHub repos where you can request features and get input for the community. Everyone there is super responsive. I put in my own 2 cents. I wanted to use JSON 5 for package.json so we could get things like comments and trailing commas and all those little annoying gotchas.
So good. Yeah.
It will never happen, they've said, no. Just because like package.json. But like the reason behind it is because so many things, including Node.js, consume package.json. And if you all of a sudden make a breaking change, like putting comments in a package.json, then it would. And JavaScript in general has no way to parse JSON 5. It's an external module, right? So that would first have to be built into, at least into Node, if not the language, right? So that's unfortunate.
I didn't know that JSON 5 was even a thing. So this is even kind of shocking to me.
Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. If you've ever edited your VS Code settings.json file, you'll note that you can put comments, you can put trailing commas. There's a whole bunch of other little things that you can do. And that's a JSON 5. And you have to have a custom parser for that rather than the JSON.parse that's built into JavaScript, which is awesome. But it will never come to Node. Somebody after me proposed that we make a .json 5 extension and it checks for that first, which Node already has that, where they check for like a .js file first, and then they'll check for a JSON file, and then they'll check for, so like they possibly could, but I highly doubt it will ever come. But I don't know. I think NPM's come a long way. I'm really excited to see what happens in the next year or so in terms of features and things like that. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is that I requested that you be able to run npm dev instead of npm run dev, or npm whatever your script is. Because, you know, you can run npm start and npm test. But then if you have another custom script, you have to run npm run and the name of the script. And like, that's the smallest thing ever, but it trips up everybody. And I proposed that it will check if there's a script by that name. And if not, it will fall back to, or first it will check if there's like a native command called that, and if not, it will look for a script of that name, and they said no as well.
That's what Yarn does, and I've always really liked that about Yarn. It is a small thing, but here's the thing that I think is nice about it. It's a convention, right? It's a convention that is like, those kind of things are just choices that we have to make all the time in web development. Like, specifically in the JavaScript ecosystem, there's so many things to choose from that you get you know, choice paralysis because there's just so many choices. And at the end of the day, having the ability to name your scripts whatever you want and do NPM run, whatever, instead of there being like a clear convention, all right, test is always NPM run test or NPM test, that, you know, lint is always NPM lint. Like, that would be so nice to have these standards that were just like a thing that maybe you could extend if you wanted to, but like having the standard would be a really nice.
Not even like a standard, but just check. If like you, if you run NPM bundle,
yeah,
and there's nothing built into NPM that's called NPM bundle, like there is NPM publish, then it says, oh, maybe there's a script. Like, you could just check, right? And they said no, and I was like, well, Yarn does it. And then they said Yarn does a lot less than NPM, which is true because you can't publish to the, you can't publish and all that with Yarn, but I wish it was, but they're listening. It was a cordial discussion, and there's a lot of other things on that feature request that they are going to be implementing. So that's great.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, NPM evolved a lot. I started using NPM full time rather than using Yarn. Yarn hit version 2. That was this year, right? Or was that last year?
I think it, well, we have the next point. Just grab the next point on here, which is Yarn plug and play, or Yarn 2. And you switched off Yarn.
I switched off Yarn when this happened because there was so much divisiveness around this in the Yarn community users. People were asking for fallbacks. There were large changes that you needed to make to your project to make this work. I think there was a lot of blowback about that initial release of Yarn 2. I personally don't, I remember understanding the blowback at the time, but I don't remember now, for being entirely honest. And it was, I mean, NPM, the only thing that NPM didn't have that Yarn had besides the not needing to put run in there was the package updater built into Yarn was nicer than NCU. Yes, I run NCU. I it's fine. But the Yarn one, the little interface it gives you is nicer, which is, it's not enough for me to hold on to Yarn when NPM got a lot better overall. So Yarn still exists. People still use it. Yarn version 2, it wasn't the big splash that people were expecting. It didn't cause some sort of domination on Yarn's part there.
Yeah, from what I see is that most people using Yarn are still using 1.0, yeah. Which is too bad because like no shade on the developers, but I think it was just a bit too, there was lots of breaking changes and it was really big in terms of how it rolled it out, and it just like broke everybody's things. So everybody just went back to Yarn 1 or switched over to NPM. I did find one thing the other day that I need in that Yarn has is resolutions. So if you have a package that somewhere down the dependency tree of that package, it's requiring a version which you need to change. So in my thing, I was using, I think it was Keystone, and like 4 levels down, there was like Keystone needed an uploader plugin, and that uploader plugin needed Apollo server or something like that. And it was breaking. And like, I was like, I did the whole thing where like you open an issue on the thing. They're like, well, it's not us. That's right, the dependency. Right. So you go to the dependency and you're like, well, that's not us. That's the dependency.
Yeah.
Oh, and then you go down and down and down. So I found out you can just write resolutions in your package.
Yes,
JSON.
Yes, yes.
And it'll force a specific version that you specify. And you can get it to work with NPM with a third-party package, but it doesn't work unless you have a package lock file. If you do the whole thing where you delete your package lock file in your node modules because something's broken, then you have to NPM install, and then you have to run the resolution command. It's a pain in the butt. Yarn does it way nicer.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And I've used this resolutions before myself, and I was like really struggling through some mono repo stuff on my own. And I find all of that stuff to still not be solved perfectly yet in any regard. But yeah, the resolutions is a nice thing to have. Next up is Pika and Snowpack. Now, Pika, is Pika Pack, did that become Snowpack? Pika Pack. That's my understanding of it, is Pika Pack became Snowpack.
Yeah, though there's Pika.dev, which has Snowpack. That's the bundle tool. And then Skypack, which is their CDN. That's similar to, what's Michael Jackson's URL loader for NPM? Unpackage.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was his. Interesting.
Yeah, it used to be called NPM CDN, but then they switched it over. So yeah, that, I think there's been huge, and I think we'll talk about this a little, but the whole ES modules thing has been huge.
Oh my gosh.
Pika and Snowpack has seen a huge come up.
It's very good.
We were right on that one. That's good.
Yeah.
Do we have Frederick on the podcast this year, or was that the previous year?
It had to have been this year. I think it had to.
Yeah, January 8th, 2020. So it was very shortly after we predicted that or said that that would have a big come up.
I would love to have him on again to talk more about like right now.
Because he's like one of these like visionaries in terms of like ES modules and what the future of JavaScript looks like. Speaking of the future of JavaScript, Dino, we were pretty bullish on Dino last year saying like this is going to be a really cool thing. Dino hit 1.0. So it's got like a stable API. We're seeing some good hosting for Dino. There's a lot of packages available to it. They're working away on porting the entire Node API over to Dino, which is great.
We learned how to say it, too. That was a big win for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think this goes along with just like the fact that everybody is ES modules first. And maybe we'll talk about this now. Node shipped ES modules. Finally, after probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of working on it, probably 4 years of working on it. So it's kind of cool because between Snowpack, Dino, Node ES modules, and all the other tools that we've been working with, we're slowly seeing CommonJS being phased out.
Thank you. And I'm very excited about that. I've been babbling my server-side code for a while now. So I have all my code's been in the like import syntax for a while. So it'll be nice to not have to like touch that when I move off of CommonJS entirely and stop transpiling or compiling my code. I actually really love Dino now. It's so funny. We go through these phases where we like don't know something. It just sort of sit back and wait. Maybe people are talking about it and we have to be a little bit reserved in some of our ideas about it. And like I started really playing with Dino a little bit ago here, and I released a course on it this month. So like I got pretty deep into Dino world, and it's still very fresh, right? There are definitely some things that you'll hit. Or like, it's funny because you'll hit a package and it'll be like, oh, this package is the most widely used one through the Dino ecosystem. And then there'll be like 52 stars on it on GitHub. You're like, oh,
ooh. Yeah, very early.
But one thing I've really enjoyed about my time in Dino is just how code forward it is. We're going to do a whole episode about it very soon next year. But Wes and I have been talking just about like how cool it is to be able to load like a TS file from a URL at any given point that exists on the browser. And one thing that it's really done for me is it's made me dive into the source of packages that I'm using a lot more than I do with JavaScript, because it's so easy to get to that source file. And I even just like command click on it in VS Code and it will link me to the dino.land source file. And I can look at that file and say, okay, this is like, these are the inputs, the outputs, whatever. But the fact that it's all typed, all of these things, man, I got a lot to say on this because I've been like really reading source so much since working on Dino stuff compared to what I do with Node typically.
Yeah, it's funny because it runs like TypeScript natively, so there's no compile step. And yeah, one of the really frustrating things to me is like when you run into an issue in a package and you open up the source, you're looking sometimes, most of the time, you're looking at the compiled source and not the authored sources. And as more packages move over to being TypeScript, it's going to be very, I think that Node needs, I hate to be the guy that is like, this needs to be built into Node, because we all said that with jQuery.
You
should just build jQuery into the browser. But like they need some sort of like first party support for running TypeScript in Node,
totally,
I think.
Totally. At least, but
I don't know if that will ever happen, though.
Yeah. Especially after the way Dino is built, right? The way Dino is built, like with that in the ground up, that's the framework of it, you know, is that it will just run TypeScript. Man, I'm turning into like one of those people who wants to abandon the compilers, because we're getting the ability to use so many things that are closer to the edge of the browser here, where whether it is modules in the browser or ES modules on the server, or just TypeScript running it straight up. Like to me, after using Snowpack and Dino, I'm so convinced that these like compilerless modules are the near future, and I've seen the future, and I would like to stay there.
It's so good when everything's a URL and there's not a build step or anything in your way.
It's so good. Yeah.
Maybe that's our prediction for 2021 is less compilers.
Trust me, once I get my dev environment onto Snowpack, I'm just going to be like, in the best mood all the time. Those 50-second reloads are the best thing in the entire world. Okay, next up is React. We talked a lot about suspense becoming more of a thing. And I feel like the guy with the stopwatch still waiting for suspense here. Suspense still does not have support the server-side rendering context of things, which makes it a huge no-go for a lot of people. Suspense, it exists. You know what? It's actually funny. I use suspense a lot in the React 3D course. That's the only time I've used suspense is in the React 3D course, because in React 3 Fiber, it's all browser based anyway, so you don't have to worry about server side rendering. And in the React 3D course, the React 3 Fiber team has built suspense into all of the loaders and everything, and it's really cool. I wish I could use it in any other capacity other than that, but for the most part, we have not seen suspense really take hold in any degree.
Yeah, and when we talk about this, at least I'm referring to the suspense for data loading.
Oh, yeah, there's two suspense, right, on top of everything.
We had like the wrapper where you could set a timeout, and if it went longer than that timeout, then show a loader, otherwise not. I think part of that was scrapped, and I think that whole suspense for data loading there are, I don't know any firsthand thing, but the fact that they haven't released it means that they are taking another look at it and being like, maybe this is not the right approach for us to go about this. So we were very wrong on that.
Yeah, it just seemed like, it was a big announcement and seemed really cool. You just thought it was going to have some movement. But no, not a ton of movement, at least not in front of the scenes here. And, maybe you wanted to use suspense in your server-side rendering code and you didn't know it was supported, so you dropped it in there and then it broke your site. Maybe you'd want to use one of our sponsors. What I'm just talking about, what happens if your site breaks because you use some features that don't exist in the project and, well, you thought they existed or something, or maybe you're not using TypeScript and it's not complaining at you. Either way, your site broke and you got to fix it. How do you fix it? Well, sometimes it's really hard to see exactly what happened when the site broke. Maybe you're not running into the same specific scenario that other people are running in. In fact, here's a really good scenario. For instance, this morning, Wes tried to load up his affiliate page on leveluptutorials.com, but Wes has a very specific type of user account where he has access to like the pro content and he has access to things that other people do not have access to, but he hasn't paid for a subscription because he's my co-host, because he's a deadbeat. Right. And so because of that, he ran into a very specific bug, which was on our list. And sometimes we might see this bug come in and say, ooh, I have no idea how this user's hitting this. Well, LogRocket makes it really easy to see what exactly the user did. And in Wes's case, it could just be his account and his data. But I get access to more than just the video replay of what he did. I would get access to the console log, the network tab, all of those things that you would need when you're solving a bug in your local dev environment. I could see that the network request is returning some GraphQL error saying that ID was not defined. Well, I could understand how this was happening with LogRocket. So head on over to logrocket.com/syntax and you will get 14 days for free. So check out LogRocket and see how the bugs are happening like it's magic.
See the bugs like magic. Next one was Meteor. You went off and on of Meteor on your own course platform, 16 times this year? What's the status?
Yes, me and Meteor are, what's a celebrity couple that breaks up and gets back together again? I don't know. Although it's not messy, and I've not broken up with Meteor. I like Meteor, our platform's still on it. No, Meteor was purchased by Tiny. They had just got new ownership at the very end of last year. So that was like a big thing for me to say, perhaps this is going to revitalize the community. It has since it's not exactly like world beating numbers here or anything like that. But since this version 1.9 dropping and the new ownership, they're now up to version 1.12. And they have version 2 is in beta. So I've actually, version 2 has all sorts of neat things like hot module reloading and tree shaking stuff. So there went from being absolutely no movement on the developer side of Meteor to lots of movement. The new owners have done a good job. They even approved a mini conference for Meteor. So like I said, I think it's good movement on their part. And we will see if that continues to grow and move in 2021. My lights in my office just went from concentrate to energize, and I got a little bit more of a orange glow on me now.
Awesome. Next one we have here is Svelte. I'll let you take this one as well, yeah. But definitely can't stop hearing about Svelte.
Svelte has really gotten to, it's gotten a lot more shine this year. Definitely a lot more people working in Svelte than there was in 2020. Or 2019. So Svelte definitely had a big year in terms of people using it. It is very good. I released, I think, like two or three Svelte courses this year. So I had a lot of time in Svelte, and I really enjoyed my time working in it. They also just came out with the announcement that they're going to be moving their, you know, their site building experience that was called Sapper before. It's now just going to be SvelteKit, and it's going to be with ESM using Snowpack. And oh man, so I think Svelte's going to have a big year next year too, because in my mind, they're leading the way in the whole ESM side of things for front enders. And once people get a load of some of that stuff, they're going to not want to give it back.
We also had on this list is Vue 3. I don't remember when Vue 3 came out or what we said about it. Do you?
2 or 3 months ago.
Okay. So it came out. Just, I guess it took most of the year to come out. And what I'm hearing from people is that it is awesome. I've not used it. What about you?
I haven't used 3. No, I've only used 2. There is like a Vue Hooks kind of deal that I like. I don't really, I haven't been paying enough attention to Vue this year to really know what the changes in the ecosystem are. I think my Vue time got taken up by Svelte this year, not to throw any shade on Vue, because by all means, I think Vue is getting better and better. I don't know. Maybe we should dive in and we should do a Vue 3 show.
Do a show on that. All right. Next one we have here is Apollo. So a couple of months ago, Apollo 3 came out, something I've been waiting for personally for my advanced React course. And it's awesome. They have super fine grain control over the cache. So if you need to read things or evict things or find things in the cache, they got really slick APIs around that. You can do custom logic over how things are read or merged. So you can just query items and then you can control whether they hit the network for them or how they're merged or what order they go in. Lots of like super, that stuff is so, so complicated. Every time I get into Apollo, I'm like, whoo, this is tough. Like, imagine actually building it. Like, they did a lot of work and a lot of thinking in terms of how the API should be working. And also, there's new Apollo dev tools coming out pretty soon as well, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement in Apollo. Apollo Engine became something else. I think Apollo Engine became Apollo Studio, and it gained a lot of neat features. I really like this new version too. It did make some things like the ever so slightly better, like the update. It was the manual updating of the cache stuff is a lot nicer to me, especially in like the
way easier.
The context of optimistic UI. That stuff all got a little bit nicer for me, which I would like it to be even nicer, but I get it. It's really nice. And to me personally, I've been using Apollo with both Apollo TypeScript plus GraphQL code generator to generate all my hooks for Apollo. And oh, that is the promised land. I'll tell you, that is fantastic. I actually had a conference talk, and I'll link to it, about Apollo GraphQL tooling that I think would be really interesting if you are interested in that sort of thing. So I'll make sure that's in the show notes.
Next.js had a big year, not in terms of features. They did roll out Next 10, which has the image, which is huge for me. We talked about that in our Next versus Gatsby one. They are focusing on internationalization, which is a huge pain point for a lot of people. But I just feel like it's gained some just serious momentum in terms of like, this is an awesome framework to build your app or website. I'm all over it.
Yeah, totally. I just wish they would add the routing. Yeah, I'm not going to say that one more time, but
the nested. Let's say it, because the other day I was building something. What was it? Transcripts for the syntax.fm website. And I was like, Scott, I finally need nested routing and I understand what you're talking about. I just want to render the whole same thing except for this minor little
except
part.
For this minor little part.
17 components deep.
And especially when, like, for instance, if you were to go on the Level Up Tutorials My Account page, Wes, and you were to change the page on that page navigation, we get that neat little animation where only that one little spot is animating out. You can't get that in Next.js. You just flat out do it without orchestrating it at the top level. So, bingo.
I don't know how they would do it, but I want it.
Yeah. It's really easy for me to sit back and say, just do it.
Just do it. Just push, put a button. That's always the thing for people on Twitter. Just put an edit button. Yeah. Like what? The thing that's blocking them is they couldn't figure out how to put a button.
We just had to. Oh, that's it.
Oh, a button. Oh. We were thinking like, how would we let them do it? A button. Okay.
Yeah, we are aware of that. And next up would be Gatsby, which really, you know what? I used Gatsby less this year in 2020 than I used it in 2019, but only because there's more options. Svelte kind of took the place of my Gatsby-ing stuff, but it's still a very viable option. And they released a ton of stuff, but none of which I've used. So I know you released a course on Gatsby. So you probably have a greater insight into this than I do right now.
Yeah, Gatsby's just been on fire with their different features coming out lately. They're working on making it images generate on demand instead of on build, which is can be very, very slow. They announced file system based routing. So like Next.js, you can use a certain syntax and name your files a certain way, and it'll create them for you instead of having to. You can still use the existing API, which is often great, whereas it's a create pages API. Integration with all the different CMSs has been really, really good. So Gatsby is firing on all cylinders. I think 2021 is going to be like, even since we recorded the Next versus Gatsby, there's been like three or four things that have come out since then. So I'm really excited to see both of these platforms develop over the next year.
Totally. Next up would be serverless stuff. Now, serverless has gotten easier. Begin.com, we predicted, would be a thing that more people would be having their eyes on. And we actually use Begin.com to do our transcript checking as a serverless function, right, Wes? Or when I say we, I mean you did it. I did not do it.
Yeah, I got a little bit deeper into serverless, and I needed to run something every so often,
yeah,
which is sort of like a cron job. And I also needed it to run for like minutes at a time, because there's hundreds of episodes that we need to check, especially when we're talking to GitHub in the script and pushing them to GitHub and all that stuff. And I found out that a lot of serverless providers don't have that right now. And Netlify just rolled out background functions, which is exactly what this is. And Begin had both of those, which is why I went with Begin. I was hoping to just host it with the existing website, but it wasn't possible. So big fan. I feel like serverless is finally getting to a point now where it's super easy just to write a quick little thing. In my Gatsby course, I called it a sip of backend, and people really like that. Like, you just need a little bit of backend.
I like that. Yeah.
Just a little sip of backend. You have a little serverless function. And we predicted it's going to get easier. I think it's between all of the different platforms out there, I think it's gotten so much easier. Yeah. What about you?
I agree. I have not used it to the degree that I would like to yet. And so I think for me, 2021 will be a big serverless year for me, but I've been loving, because that was my biggest complaint about it before, is when it was just AWS serverless functions and lambdas, you had to connect the lambda to the whosits to the whatsits, and next thing you know, he's like,
too hard,
too
yeah.
much. Yeah. And the local dev environment, no good. Yeah.
I honestly, the deploying, like I talked a lot about, what was it? Nojitsu. Back in the day, we had this thing called Nojitsu. You could whip up a quick Node app and host it on Nojitsu really, really easily. And I love that because it was so easy just to throw up a quick. It was almost like making an index.php and throwing it on a server, and you can hit that URL. I used to love that when I did PHP. And then everything got so much more complicated. Like you have to do SSL certificates and
CIs and CDs.
Yeah, PM2 and rerun it. And I was like, oh, and I feel like now with serverless functions, we're getting back to just write some code in a file, deploy it, and you can hit that URL, that code will run. And that's the best.
Imagine when JavaScript modules are everywhere and you can just throw up a little JavaScript file and have it be read. No problem. I like it. All right. Next one was the headless CMS Thunderdome that we had going on between all of the different options. I think Sanity really has continued to grow in the headless CMS space, especially as a paid service. WordPress just sort of is doing its thing still. Nothing like really shocking from WordPress out of this year or any of the other CMSs, to be honest.
WP GraphQL. This is not WordPress specifically, but
yeah, WP GraphQL. Yeah.
They released 1.0, which is great. Gatsby is actually funding that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's a shining spot. But it's other than that, there's not a lot of movement necessarily, at least not that has been on our radar.
We also, there's a couple other headless CMSs that have big come up. Keystone is the one I've been super bullish on this year. Keystone is releasing, as I'm talking about it, it's probably out now. I've been working with the folks at Keystone just to make sure that it works with my app. And it's built on Next.js, which is really cool. So the back end, if you want to make any customizations to the actual admin UI, you can just do that because it's just Next.js at the end of the day. It's just big, big fan of it. Strapi is another one. I spent some time this year building an app in Strapi. I really like it. It's super impressive, the UI that you have up and running. You can just log in, create your types, relate things to one another, and you can do so much via the UI. There's just a lot of polish on that one. So those are two really big ones. What else did we have? Redwood was a big one.
Still in development. Blitz, still in development. But I don't know if we mentioned those in our...
I don't think so. I think they came on our radar this year. Yeah. So, but all these years of like yearning for a headless CMS that has really good user management and really good inputs, I'm going to say we're finally there. There's lots of really good options to build your websites. I think the only thing that we're still missing yet is... And I don't even know how to solve this, is the plugin ecosystem that WordPress gives
yeah,
you.
I know. Yeah.
I don't know if that exists in any other ecosystem yet, which not everybody needs that, but certainly a lot of people sticking around on WordPress because of it.
Yeah, totally. You know, next up we had was Cypress, and this is fun. We had currently no Firefox support, hopeful for 2020. And guess what? We got Firefox support as well as Edge support, and I use that every day. So I still use them like Cypress quite a bit. And one neat thing that we did is the Cypress community has definitely evolved. There's, you know, in the React testing library space, there's now like DOM testing library, but there's also a Cypress version of it too. So you can use the same syntax that you're used to in the React testing library in Cypress.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. And not only that, but there's like a whole bunch of plugins. I've gotten really deeper into Cypress myself because like we use Cypress quite a bit. So having to write my own custom Cypress commands so that I can do like cy.login and have it log in with an account on our database and stuff like that has been really nice. I really like using it. What are some plugins I use? Because I use a couple of plugins, which I didn't even know was a thing, but I use a dark mode plugin for Cypress just to turn it to be dark mode. And people have their minds blown by the fact that there's a dark mode. What else do I use? I use Cypress Promise Register, where you can do like a Cypress promise to better control the flow, and then the testing library Cypress add commands. So I use those three plugins, and it makes my Cypress. There's a whole community of Cypress plugins out there. And if you look on Cypress's site, to me, that was like a huge thing beyond the Firefox support, was having all those neat plugins to play with.
Next one we have here, and this is actually not a space that I dipped into, is the whole design and code mixing space. But we had modules here. What's the status of that? Have you used that?
It's a great question. I have not used it. And I was hoping to get access to it in September of last year. And if you have their site, modules.app, it still says apply for beta access. So I have not gotten access to it. As far as I know, it's a thing still. I follow the developer on Twitter and he seems to be tweeting about it. But I don't know when this thing's coming, if it's coming, but it exists still. Figma, holy cow. Figma had a great year in 2020 because Figma is one of those products where like Sketch came out and people started asking for features and they were just like, no, we're like not going to give you those features. And guess what? We're not going to give you support for anything other than Mac. And meanwhile, Figma just like crams features in constantly. I don't know if you've been paying attention to anything they've done, but one of the biggest things that they added was auto layout tools, where it's basically flex containers. So say like you have a button. Well, now this button's design is basically determined by the padding. So you could set padding on a button with text and have it auto expand and do all that stuff without needing to do any weird constraint or layout tools. So there's been like a ton of like the types of features that web developers really like to see have just been dropping left and right. I'm trying to find, there's like a new feature that they recently did. Let's see, auto layout has become more flexible. So now you can do like flex containers with their auto layout. Oh, that's pretty cool. So the options are hug content, fill container. Like that's pretty neat. And there's also button variants is now a thing now. So you can have variants on your components. Instead of making like 800 different components, you make like one component and then you can like you have your button and then you can have a disabled variant and a hovered variant and whatever. And it just exists as a drop down on that thing. It's like these are the tools that developers would really love to have when they're working in a design application, because that's how development works. So Figma, to me, constantly innovating with a lot of the stuff they're adding. So check it out.
I'm so excited to use this. I said previously on the show, my next thing that I design, and like next website I design, will be in Figma. And then I fired it up and I was at my at the cottage in the full stack shack at the time. And Figma like needs good internet to work. Mm-hmm. There is like a, you can save locally, but it doesn't like, it makes you save a new copy every single time you want to hit the save button. So like, that's not a workflow for anyone doing any sort of design. So I was kind of bummed. So I went back to Sketch and did my website. So the next thing I design hopefully will be in Figma. And it's really exciting. And another thing I wanted to say is, did you see on Twitter the other day, there was like a 3D app that is going to be launched pretty soon?
Did I see it? Oh, what's it called? I retweeted that thing. I opened it and I was like, mouth agape. It is very cool.
Like what is it? What is it? Like it's a 3D app. What is it for? What's it called?
It's funny. My Landon.
Spline.
Landon always like whenever he like learns about something new, he asks, what it do? What does it do?
What it do?
So I'll be like, Dad, is that, what is this? I'll be like, oh, it's a microphone. What it do?
What it do? Oh. So it's a 3D design tool for the web. And it looks like it looks kind of like Figma.
Yeah.
And you can design 3D stuff. And then like, what's the point? You export it so you can use it on the web or what?
That's what I would imagine to be the case. Okay. There's not a ton of information about it, but
comes out tomorrow. Yeah, it's not even out yet. It comes out December 1st. So you're listening to this. It's already out. So check it out. Spline.design.
Yeah, it says export production ready web assets. So you could probably like drop in like when I did my React 3D course, it was definitely missing from that world was like having to do everything in code can be really awesome. But sometimes you really want a GUI to click and drag and move and whatever.
It's funny, like probably 7 or 8 years ago, I built an ad for like some car company and the car would drive in and brake and it would dip down a little because the brakes hit.
Yeah.
And then it would blow a little smoke when it turned off. And we had designers do it in some sort of app and then we exported that to HTML and CSS, I think. And it was not very good. So, and that was like 7 or 8 years ago. So I'm excited to see what, maybe that's more motion graphics though. This is 3D. So that was the list of the tech that we thought was going to be hot. We were on in some of them, way off in the others. Let's move into some other things that just as a look back into 2020. The biggest one to me is that ES modules had a big come up. We talked about that.
Yeah,
totally. ES modules can be used in the browser. They can be used in Node. Dino has it. We're getting build tools that are ES modules first, which is Snowpack, things like that. Webpack has had it for a long time. ES modules for beginning. I still have not shipped any code that is ES modules in the browser.
Mm.
It's still all compiled, but
yeah,
to maybe 2021 is the year for that.
Yeah, I guess maybe it could be. It really just think about who has to ship it and who hasn't shipped it. I guess I don't know where it's fully supported just yet. That's got to be a whole episode now. Yeah, the bundler world really took a big jump, I think. I think people are really starting to see, especially with the ESM stuff, like the bundlers that we have coming in Snowpack and Vite. I'm going to say this correct one of these days, is going to be pretty cool. I think that whole world has a lot to offer. I think Rollup became much more greatly used in being able to ship all sorts of things like ESM. I don't know if anybody's used the TSDX library for creating libraries in React and TypeScript, but that's built with Rollup and it ships ESM and all of that good stuff that we're talking about in this episode. So
yeah, we have a whole episode on bundlers and tooling. You can go back to that and we'll go through all the other ones, but it's been a big year for all of the different tools and bundlers that we have. GraphQL. I feel like GraphQL got way easier in terms of tooling and things like that. Just re-recording my advanced React course from a year and a half, 2 years ago versus now, having to manually write the types and type everything out and then type it for your server and then type it for your API gateway and then type it again when you're consuming it, that is sort of a thing of the past. And I feel like it's just gotten way easier for people to go ahead and use it.
Yeah. And types, we talked a lot about, you know, waiting to see what the next type library movement would be like, who's going to take the crown. And it seems pretty obvious to me that TypeScript has taken the crown over Flow and Reason, even though if those are both still widely used, I think more people are using TypeScript. To me, there's a lot more tools around it, a lot more of the community juice, regardless of if you like Flow or not. TypeScript really seems to have the juice. And this was my first year writing a lot of TypeScript. I mean, we moved our entire code platform, server and client over to the TypeScript, along with fully typed in our API and everything. I got deep into Rust, which is my first fully typed language that's like typed by default, like strong type language that for me, like really blew open like the idea of using types in my code base overall. So TypeScript for me got so much more of a real world experience for me.
Yeah, me too. It's probably been about 6-7 months. Every single new thing that I build has been in TypeScript. I've been working on a TypeScript course here and there. I've got a really wicked layout, lots and lots of demos. And I'm there. Like I don't know if I was late to the game, but I get it. I totally get it.
We're both on time.
Yeah, we're on time. I think like it's at that point now where it seems to be the winner until maybe JavaScript gets its own types, which would be kind of cool. It seems to be everybody's shipping it. There's types available for everything. You NPM install automatically has types. And even like VS Code, if you just write regular JavaScript in VS Code, you still get a lot of the benefits of TypeScript, which is so awesome. So I am officially a huge fan of TypeScript. We'll probably do an entire show or two on what the benefits are and the tooling around it and whatnot. But and also I feel like not just like me and you, maybe it's just me and you, but I feel like everybody else is sort of jumping on the TypeScript train as well. So choo-choo. Yeah.
Choo-choo. Yeah. I like it a lot. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. Also, WASM became a viable. Like in the past, at least for me, I looked at the sort of WASM world and was just sort of like, oh, it's a thing, right? It exists. But like for me, I now understand how people are using WASM in real world production ways.
What is WASM? Tell for those who don't know.
WASM is basically being able to use assembly code in the web. And if that doesn't mean a whole lot to you, think about like being able to write a language that's maybe not JavaScript. Maybe it is, but maybe it's not JavaScript. Maybe it's like Rust. And that language can do some things that are very, very fast, very, very performant, much more performant than a JavaScript or a Node app could do specific tasks, right? Well, what you'd be able to do is compile that code, that Rust code, into assembly code in which the browser could then load up as a module and use directly into your JavaScript code. A good example of this would be an app that Wes and I use very frequently is the MongoDB Compass app. In the Compass app, while it's not built in WASM itself, there are specific functionalities such as their performance tracking stuff that is actually written in Rust and then exported so that what they do is that they call a function that appears to be a JavaScript function by all intents and purposes, but that function is written in Rust. So when you import it and use it, like the consumer of that might not need to know too much about it, just the ins and outs, then that function goes off and does all its stuff and it's much faster because it's assembly and then it pops the answer back out. So that's a good example of some real world usage of WASM in the wild, because Compass is an Electron app and it's browser based, but it is using WASM to do a bunch of computation heavy stuff.
I don't think that I knew that. I knew that it was like, oh, you can run games in the browser and it runs the assembly code under the hood. But I'm just looking at this GitHub repo called Awesome WebAssembly Languages. There's a list of probably 30 or 40 different languages that you can run, including PHP.
Yes.
So you could
assembly.
Like,
yeah.
Even like you have some weird dependency that's written in a different language other than JavaScript. Or it says it really nicely here. It says WebAssembly, or WASM for short, is a low-level bytecode format that runs in the browser just like JavaScript. It is designed to be faster to parse than JavaScript, as well as faster to execute, which makes it a suitable compilation target for new and existing languages.
Yeah.
So you got to like, you got to write it in like, there's like a PHP, PIB, WASM interpreter.
So I know you, because both of us, we do a lot of video stuff. You've used some of the video compilation, I guess, rendering applications, like what's the FFmpeg?
Yeah, FFmpeg is what most video stuff uses under the hood. So you could run that in the browser.
Check it out. FFmpeg.wasm. I'll send a link. I'll put it in the show notes here. Yeah.
No way.
You can run it in the browser. Yep.
No way. Why did?
Yes way. Yes way. You can
how
pass
did I not an, know
you,
about this?
Upload a video, convert it with. I'm actually in the process of doing a fun little project with this FFmpeg.
So is that what Figma uses under the hood for some stuff?
Figma is built in something interesting, possibly Rust.
Figma is powered by WebAssembly C++. WebAssembly's cut Figma's load time by 3x. So there are many benefits to using C++ code. Ah, so that's kind of interesting because like you think like, oh, I don't want to use Figma because it's just web tech and that eventually is going to get super slow and sluggish, but it's not.
It's not.
It's
C++. Yeah, it's just in used in the web. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because we talked a lot about WASM, you know, like hold your horses. We'll just see what, you know, WASM isn't necessarily something we need to worry about, whatever. And by all intents and purposes, it might not be something that you might not ever need to write a C code to and use it in the browser. But the fact that you could have FFmpeg import it like a JavaScript module, then, you know, use a function directly out of it and have it just work in the browser is very cool. Like that's the kind of thing that you'll probably want to be aware of.
All right, Scott, you need to use your Figma connections to get a dev from Figma on to talk about this WASM. That'd be so cool. You have your people call their people.
Yeah, I'll do that. Well, I'll have my people call their people and then set up some invoicing and then we can track that invoice to make sure it gets paid on time. How about that?
With FreshBooks. FreshBooks is our sponsor today. FreshBooks.com/syntax. They are cloud accounting for your freelance or small business or whatever. If you're sending out an invoice, don't open Excel and make a thing. That's impossible to track. Do it all through FreshBooks. You can send it out. You can check on what's paid. You can send late payment reminders. You can track all of your expenses. You can auto import your expenses from a credit card or a bank account. It is awesome. So check it out. FreshBooks.com/syntax. Make sure you use syntax in the how did you hear about us section. And thank you so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring. And thank you so much to
Syntax as well.
Listeners for using FreshBooks because they just re-upped for sponsorship for next year. And that is because it is working and you, the listener, are using FreshBooks, which is awesome.
I think we could say thank you to the Syntax listeners for giving all of our sponsors a try because our sponsors have really enjoyed, you know, getting to share the magic of their services and whatever. But I think for the most part, you all are you trust us to share what we think is really cool with these companies. And I think it reflects really nicely that upon all of you that you trust us to that degree because we use all of these services and we love them. So I'm just happy that you guys can see that magic.
Cracks a Pepsi. Another big thing, unsuspecting, was work from home.
Oh, gosh.
Obviously exploded in 2020 because of the nouveau coronavirus. We all started to, not all of us, but a lot of us, I would say most of us are now working from home. And remote work, it was kind of like this like weird thing where some companies were into remote work and some weren't, and they weren't doing it right. And it really was just learning by fire, where you really had to figure out how to make this work by working remotely. That is awesome. Somewhat related, Starlink internet. We talked about my cottage internet situation. Starlink internet is now coming, which is great for remote workers in remote locations, which is great. What else? Webcams. Everybody's got a wicked webcam now.
Yeah, everybody got a wicked webcam because everybody finally realized that the Mac webcams have not been updated since 1908. They're just like the oldest part of the Mac. I don't know where they even find this supply.
Yeah,
like,
when you turn it on, there's a big poof. You know, in the old timey photos, there's a big cloud of smoke. That's what happens when you turn on the Mac.
Silver
webcam.
Dust. You can't move anywhere or else it'll ruin the exposure time. Yeah. No, I know the Mac webcams, like, I don't know, like, where they even find the supply of these webcams. They are so old. They must have just ordered too many of them initially and been like, well,
they got a deal.
Just got to use them until they're gone. No, I have no idea. Everybody got a nice webcam or a Cam Link to make a webcam nicer. And I don't mean everybody, but everybody spent so much time on Zoom and whatever video calls. Now we all realize just how bad it can be with these crappy webcams. Overall, a lot of the stuff around, is your company ready to do like remote working? Our industry probably sees this in a much different way than many other industries because we are inherently a little bit easier to work remotely if you're a computer programmer. Granted, it has removed some of the personal aspects of getting to nudge your coworker on the desk and say, hey, can you take a look at this? Am I doing this in a really dumb way? They can't just pop over and look at your screen and say, yeah, this is stupid. It's really changed the way that a lot of companies are working and open up the possibilities for a whole ton of different SaaS companies to come in, swoop in and collect some money by giving you a service that is going to make your team work a little bit better remotely. I know we've had to use Discord pretty heavily. We do all of our team meetings in Discord now. So we just pop on over to a video chat room and chat away and whatever. And it's actually pretty nice. You can have a little breakout room and say, hey, can you come take a look at this for a second? And it's almost like actually being at this person's desk. So yeah, these tools have all gotten a little bit better, changed quite a bit. Not something any of us necessarily expected, but probably a change that was going to happen at some point anyways.
This is not new at all, but pair programming remotely has seen a big up because like you need to debug things with coworkers. And I use, for the first time on like a really big app, I used VS Code's Live Share.
Yeah, pretty cool.
With Jed from Keystone. And I was so impressed at it. You can see where they are. They're moving around. You can highlight things. And we just had like the video of somebody. I wonder if they're going to add like WebRTC eventually so you can have video in it as well. So it was good. The only thing it didn't have is that like it doesn't show when someone's hovering and looking at like type definitions or something like that. It doesn't show that. So there's a bit of like missing context there. I wonder if that will come at some point. Another one is Tuple. I've not tried this before. So they sent me a DM about it a while ago to try it. I just never did. But it's apparently a really good pair programming. The Farhan from Shopify is on the homepage. And I saw a talk from him like 10 years ago when he was at Extreme Labs about pair programming and how they only do pair programming. So if he is endorsing it, like he's probably one of the top pair programming enthusiasts in the world. So if he's endorsing it, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah. I have a hard time with it because of my general hyperactivity level, but like I do really always appreciate having multiple eyes on code. Some of the next ones here would be an actual like code library. React Query got a lot of juice. A lot of people using React Query in 2020, and I think that's probably going to continue because in my mind, what React Query did was make working with HTTP a large part as nice as working with GraphQL. Granted, it's not as nice as like the types up and down the stack that you get with GraphQL, but the fact that you use React Query the same way that you use Apollo, use Query in Apollo, and having the cache just exist like that, React Query is basically the way to do HTTP requests and storing of cache data for me now.
Alpine.js, it's not something I've used yet, but it seems to have gotten really good traction in the Laravel PHP community. And what it is I like to think of it as like JavaScript sprinkles, you know, early on in the Angular days where you would just write like ng repeat and you would just like, it's all declarative. You write your HTML a certain way and then it just is JavaScript. That's what Alpine.js is. And I think there is, as much as we talk about building these crazy Next.js, 100% React, server rendered, TypeScript, there's a large portion of, I even think our listenership who are working on 10-year-old server rendered applications, and parts of them are built in JavaScript and whatnot. But if you just need to add a little bit of interactivity to something, it doesn't make sense to change that entire view over to a single page React app. So Alpine.js is that. And I think that that really filled a need that a lot of people wanted.
You know what that, I mean, I wonder like if web components are going to continue to fill more of that need too. I've been seeing a lot of people talk more and more about web components towards the end of the year. And I don't know if you've checked out Stencil at all, but Stencil seems pretty cool. It's like a multiple output target web component framework where you can like have React working play by play with Vue and web components. It all works very nicely together. I haven't used Stencil myself, but it seems like something that could be coming more of a tool. Speaking of more of a tool, 2020 is a giant tool. The year itself is a tool. Remember when that was like a big insult? 2020, man.
Rough year.
Let's just get out of here. Let's just stop it.
Yeah, it is a hard year for productivity. Just like everything changed, just mental, trying to focus on your work when there's a lot going on in the world. So it was
losing
definitely
half of your work time.
Yes. Just in terms of like sheer being able to work. I know that you had that. So yeah, it was a rough year. I don't know if we necessarily need to go into all the ups and downs, but it was a tough year. And I want to say thank you to everybody who listened in all year long. I'm super impressed that despite all that happened, we never missed an entire episode. We did over 100 episodes of Syntax this year. People kept on listening. I thought we were going to see a major drop when everyone stopped commuting, and that didn't happen. People are still sending in their potluck questions, and it's been good to have this podcast for this year.
We're endlessly thankful for you for listening and keeping the podcast as popular as it is. But it's also like, hey, Wes, it's been awesome having a whole year of doing episodes with you. We got to chat web about so many cool things. We had a lot of cool people on the show. And
yeah,
you know what? I'm optimistic for 2021. 2020 can go. I don't know what they say. I'm trying to say something appropriate, but it's not coming to me right now.
It can kick rocks is what you're trying to say there, Scott.
Rocks. Hey, one time I told a guy in a bar to kick rocks and it might've been the coolest I've ever been.
Oh man. I love that kind of stuff. Like I call people goofballs all the time and goofball, you know, like I love those kinds of like you're being mean, but you're also being super PG.
Yeah. Let's say somebody has a full diaper. You've gone totally full diaper.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully you have an enjoyable New Year's Eve, not going anywhere, staying home, which is what I do every year, regardless. Yes. being safe. Thank you so much for tuning in. And we will catch you next year.
Except for we didn't do sick picks.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I tried to wrap that up way too early. You got a sick pick for me today, Scott?
Sick pick. Do I have a sick pick for you? I think I do. I've been like, I have a lot of sick picks lately where I feel like I've just like discovered a lot of cool things, whether it be
podcasts. You got another podcast for us, Scott?
I might have a podcast. I've been listening to a lot of cool podcasts lately, but no, I'm actually going to sick pick a light bulb today because you may know in our smart home episode, we talked a little bit about the fact that I was on the Philips Hue platform, and Philips Hue is fine. There's a lot of great things. The app is like the slickest experience. Like Philips Hue, man, have really nailed a lot of aspects of it, but the bulbs are very expensive. And when you get into like flood bulb territory, it's like $40 a pop. And when I have six flood bulbs in my kitchen, there is no way that I'm spending that kind of money on flood bulbs just to make them smart. Well, I have found a Works with Hue bulb, and I didn't realize this was even a thing, but this brand, INNR, pronounced inner, they work with Philips Hue, and I bought their floodlights. They have bulbs, they have spotlights, they have strips, and everything's quite a bit cheaper, maybe like half the price. So I'm gonna sick pick some inner bulbs here so that you, if you're looking for a little bit cheaper of a situation with your Philips Hue, can use these. And I've connected now 8 of them, and they're perfect. They work lovely. My wife refers to our kitchen as a cave now because I turn the lights down low when I'm doing dishes at night.
My wife loves having the lights as dim as possible.
Me too.
I just,
oh, I just, man.
Like,
Yes.
Beam it into my eyes. I want it to be like an operating room. I hate sitting in the dark.
Corneo will come up and just be like, what is this cave? Like, what are you doing? Get my my eyes ready for sleepy time.
I'm going to sick pick something that I've been thinking about getting for a long, long time, and that is a weighted blanket.
Oh,
yes.
We got
one for my daughter 6 months ago, just because she was having some trouble sleeping. And every time I like put it on me, and also every time I go to the dentist and they put that lead vest on you, yeah. I feel this just like overwhelming sense of calm. Good. And I'm just like, maybe, like, why is it that it just feels so good? So we ended up getting the heaviest one you can buy, 25-pound weighted blanket for our bed. Like, I was telling my wife, I just want the weighted blanket to outweigh the weight of the world.
Yes. I want it to physically turn my bones to powder. That's what I would prefer.
Oh, and I'm like, this is like the heaviest one. Is this going to be too much? No way. I could probably put three of them on me and be fine. And it is so nice. We've had it for a couple days now. And every night I go to bed and I put it on me and go, ah. And I'm a couple days in and I've slept really good all of those nights. And I don't know if that's correlation or causation just yet, but it feels awesome. And I can't believe I waited so long. Because like investing in your sleep setup, I don't think there's any other way to do it.
Yeah, I have this Peddleton one that is from Costco, and I have the 20-pounder. Courtney got it for me last year for Christmas, and oh, man, I love it. Yes, I agree, man. That thing, you put that thing on, and it's that same lead vest experience, and I totally dig it.
Oh, I can't believe I waited so long. So big fan of that.
Yeah. Shameless plugs. I have courses out every single month on Level Up Tutorials. We're recording this far enough advanced that I don't even know what my next course will be. But I'll tell you what, my November course was Dino 101 for Web Developers, where we tackle the task of understanding what Dino is. We write a lot of TypeScript code. We get down with some neat stuff like, you know, we build a contract generator, reading it and writing files. But we also get deep into writing a HTTP server with Oak, where we serve not only a JSON API, but we also serve up static files as well. We talk all about error handling middleware, and you learn all about how it would look to write a real world application in Dino. So check it out at leveluptutorials.com.
I'll plug all of my courses. Go to westboss.com/courses, and it's a list of all of my courses that you have on there, JavaScript, CSS, you name it. Some of them are free. The paid ones, use a coupon code Syntax for $10 off. All right, I think that's it now. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you next year.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.